Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans.
Well, good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here.
Here,
Constantino.
He is over here. We have Bill in the studio.
One of our researchers and writers, Bill Timmerman, in with us today.
Good morning,
and
everybody.
It makes the phrase deja vu, you know, happening all over again seem almost redundant.
Another budget crisis.
Another cuts.
Another fake budget crisis. Another
fake debt ceiling crisis.
That's
another
right.
Fake everything. And the problem is, in terms of the impact of all this effrontery to the American economic system, all this political playing games, is real serious damage to the American economy.
Absolutely.
It did last time. And 2 years ago, Mike and I talked extensively. I think we did a couple of shows on the debt ceiling crisis. We explained that the debt ceiling is not raising it, doesn't increase spending or lower spending. It's not really about that. It's the debt ceiling just raises the amount of money that the government can borrow in order to cover already passed legislation.
Yeah. You know, there's a piece in USA Today, 66 questions people want to know about. So if you can go find that somewhere. I have to admit, when I am so tired of hearing about this. When I reach over and turn off, of course, none of you, but you're going to get Democratic Perspective's slant on the government shutdown and the debt ceiling and Obamacare's role in all of this, which means you should leave your radio on. But as soon as I start hearing this, I've had so much of this, I reach over and kind of click it off.
Well, you know, we've had 2 weeks now of nonpartisan local support for local development. Now we're back. We're doing partisan this morning, folks.
That's right.
So what is the debt ceiling crisis, the shutdown of the government, which comes first? What's it really all about?
You got the list over there.
We'll get to the list. But the main thing, I think, Mike, is that the debt ceiling crisis is not really about debt, because, and Bill can tell us maybe the exact numbers, but the percentage of debt to GDP has been going down. The deficit's been going down. The new projections for the amount of debt the next few years is basically a level feeling. There is no super rising thing of debt. And yet this is what we're fighting about, right, Bill?
Yeah, you know, this has been going on actually probably since Reagan, when they first introduced the idea of budget.
Well, the guy that doubled the deficit. Yeah,
yes,
go ahead,
but they introduced this idea of sequestration, budget sequestration. That was the first nail in the Republican nail in the coffin of the U.S. economy. What they decided was that you could not raise spending on any particular item without reducing spending elsewhere. They set an absolute cap on the United States debt, which is crazy to begin with, because as the country grows, as the economy grows, as services to the economy grow, quite naturally the debt will go up or go down, depending upon the immediate economic conditions. I mean, sometimes
so when you have a great recession, like we just came out of, the debt goes up because the amount of money the government
social
can
services.
Collect. And Social Security, more people are on unemployment, more people need Medicaid, and so the amount of spending goes up.
So social services go up, and it's key to the business cycle. And we've, despite the best efforts of the Fed in increasing interest rates when the economy overheats and decreasing interest rates when the economy slows down, we haven't been able to entirely suppress the business cycle. So government expenditures are tied to the business cycle, and the idea of putting an absolute cap on them is purely ideological. It has absolutely nothing to do with economics. So we began with sequestration, and now we have to deal with government shutdowns, and the shutdowns are threatened by the Republicans because they can't get what they want by the normal legislative process.
So if the debt's going down and the deficit's going down, then what is this all about? This is about the amount of government spending, particularly government spending that's used for social programs, right? Republicans want to basically, and have been maneuvering for four or five different ways, and I got to say, they want to cut Medicare, they want to cut Social Security, they want to cut unemployment insurance, they want to cut food stamps, they want to cut the social program. And what's happened in the country, as we've all talked about, all three of us before, is that when you look at what's happening, the wages that people are making now, most people have stagnated. They're at, I think, below 1979 levels. But the amount of money that the top percentages of the country get have been going up and up and up and up. And there's an interesting article that I was reading by an economist, and it said basically the wealthy feel no risk anymore. They have no risk of unemployment. They have no risk of losing their houses. They have no risk of not being able to send their kids to college. They have no risk. And so they don't really believe in what happens to everybody else, which is you can just lose your job.
Well, they have no risk in the U.S. economy. The statistic, you know, the 400 richest Americans have controlled $200 trillion. I can't even conceive of that. But I want to do a little quick shutdown history.
Okay.
The government's been shut down 17 times since 1977.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a fascinating statistic, according to the Congressional Research Service. The longest shutdown was no more than 3 days. Most of the time it's no more than 3 days, and often less than a day. But the longest one was January 5th. 1996 is when it ended, and it went for 21 days.
This is when the Republicans tried to shut down. Well, they shut down the government because they wanted to beat Bill Clinton.
Generally considered a mistake. This was a Newt Gingrich thing. They all got into his office with the dinosaur heads all around, and which I seems terribly appropriate. And they talked about shutting down the government as a tactic. Now, but I have to admit, generally, everybody agrees it wasn't a good idea, but here we are again.
Here we are again.
Yeah, here we are again. They don't seem to have learned from their past mistakes. The thing about this is that when the Republicans have comfortable majorities in both houses of the Congress, they, as was, we experienced this a few years ago, they don't even allow debate on these bills. Now they're in a situation where they don't control, they don't have a majority in the Senate. They can't get through what the Tea Party members of the House want in terms of legislation. But instead of living with the fact that we did in fact pass the Affordable Health Care Act and that it's going to be implemented now, they've decided to hold the entire economy of the United States hostage. It's a form of extortion. You know, and it has nothing whatever to do with legislative compromise.
The other thing is that Obama won the last election. They had a candidate. They had a very, very, very wealthy, well-spoken and well-funded candidate, and they lost, substantially. The other thing that happens is that the only thing the Republican control is the House of Representatives. But if you look at the total vote for Democrats and the total vote for Republicans, if there wasn't gerrymandering, there are almost 1.2 million, something like that, votes that the Democrats got more than the Republicans.
More importantly, if the Speaker of the House would bring a spending bill to the floor, don't forget, he won't. This is the way American government. He won't even bring the. If he brings the bill to the floor, it passes. There's enough Republicans that would vote for it, but he won't bring the bill to the floor because the Tea Party wing of the Republicans in the House of Representatives that you just mentioned, he's afraid of alienating them because he'll lose his job. And I think it all comes down to tanning booths and the amount of money that the Speaker of the House gets more than a regular representative, and he can afford those haircuts and the tanning booths.
I think the thing is that as the difference between the very wealthy and everybody else has grown greater, there's more and more a sense that we're not all in the same country together. But Mike or Bill, you had a list of, let's look, folks, for a minute at what the Republicans are demanding that that Obama administration do in order for them to gloriously raise the debt ceiling for 1 year.
Yeah, this is very interesting. They talk about the fact that if Obama would just sit down with them, everything would be all fine. But if you look at the list of demands they're making in order to go ahead and allow the passage of the budget, here are some of the things that are there that they absolutely will not compromise on. They want a 1 year delay in the implementation of the Affordable Health Care Act. They want fast track authority to overhaul the tax code, which means, again, tax cuts for the wealthy. They want construction of the Keystone XL oil pipeline.
Let me come in here for a minute. The stats I finally found here are the project would create 3,900 temporary construction jobs.
The pipeline.
Pipeline would support that. It would create 35 permanent jobs after it was built and 15 temporary jobs. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can argue about the Keystone pipeline either way, but you've got to, look at the facts about it. So go on, Bill.
They want to increase offshore oil and gas production, and they want to permit, this is a good one, more energy exploration on federal lands. We're going to have drilling in the Grand Canyon, I guess.
Absolutely.
The legislation also rolls back regulations on coal ash, blocks new Environmental Protection Agency regulations on greenhouse gas production, eliminates a $23 billion fund to ensure the orderly dissolution of failed major banks, which means we won't be able to shut down these rogue banks, eliminates mandatory contributions to the new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and who is that protecting us, folks, you and me? And it wants to limit medical malpractice lawsuits and increase means testing for Medicare. Now, that's quite a shopping list. That's all stuff that they would never get through the Congress any other way but holding the entire economy hostage.
Right. And so this list that they've given the administration of stuff that they want. Otherwise, they're going to crash the economy. And if they don't crash it immediately, tomorrow, what is the date, Bill? October 17th?
The deadline now, we're not talking about the government shutdown here. The government shutdown occurs when we don't get a budget passed by the deadline.
Right.
And that creates lots of problems. Midnight tonight. And it furloughs a lot of people in the government. It keeps what they call essential services going, which mainly means military, police, and the folks that watch the animals at medical research facilities and stuff like that.
And the guys who listen in on our
And you will still get your Social Security and your Medicare payments.
And your mail, because mail is an independent business now.
Yes. But the deadline the serious deadline that we're facing, folks, is October the 17th, because that's when we have to have the date by which we have to have the debt ceiling raised.
Yeah,
and if we don't raise the debt ceiling, folks, you don't get your Medicare and your Social Security payments.
That's default time.
We've been through this before, and before Mike and I were basically in favor of several different presidential options. The president has a lot of implied power, and
yeah,
he could ignore the debt ceiling. It's kind of an artificial thing. Obama said he will not do that. We like the idea of this silly trillion-dollar coin. There were lots of they sounded gimmicky, but they got around the debt ceiling crisis. And the president said he won't do any of them, but he also won't negotiate on this particular issue.
It gets interesting here, and this is the beauty of American government. Is right now, I think the talk this morning all over is Obama gets to decide what essential services are. So first of all, of course, continuing the really good information that's finally coming out about the American Health Care Act, I mean, the Affordable Health Care Act, Obamacare. You were finally getting some really good information out there, some truth out there. That will continue because, according to the administration, that's going to be essential services. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens if a shutdown happens tonight. What is considered essential services?
What is the desperation? Let me ask both you guys. What is the desperation to stop Obamacare? It extends medical insurance
I don't want to repeat
to millions
their lives.
And millions yeah. of people.
That's it.
It reduces the we all pay an indirect hidden tax because people go into the hospital emergency room for small items because they don't have any medical insurance and the emergency rooms have to treat them. And it causes a tax. So when you wonder why a bag of saline solution costs $539 and it would cost 17 cents to produce, the hospitals are trying to recoup their losses. So why be so against Obamacare?
Well, you know, my take on this is that the Republican Party has made a fundamental mistake, and it's a very serious mistake. It believes, just the way it believed that Romney was a shoo-in for the presidency, it believes that the American people are against the Affordable Care Act. That, if you look at the polls, is a serious mistake. They're risking the future of the Republican Party just to make sure that the working poor don't have access to affordable health care.
Now,
why would you take that kind of risk? The answer to that, I think, is that they don't believe that they're running that risk.
That's
they
right.
believe that they have the support of the people, and that, I think, is an incredible error. It's as big as the error in thinking that
Bill,
Romney was going to win easily.
Will anyone ever call them on this? In other words, we have all these predictions the stimulus was going to do this and that, all these false, phony, bad, and simply just plain wrong economic predictions. We have all these political predictions that are always wrong. And what I'm saying to you, Bill and Mike, is they never get called to account
for
them.
That's the problem with corporate media. We have a complicit media. We got an NBC executive going on record saying it's not our job to tell a truth about Obamacare. It's the administration's. It's not our job to expose Republican lies about Obamacare. He says this on the air. Now, there's a big thing going around the internet now to censor him. But the other thing this is a media guy saying it's not our job to expose the lies of one party over another. And maybe somewhere down deep in there might be some kernel of truth, but I don't think so. I want to talk about the Ryan budget.
I want to make one point, and that's just to go back to Bill for 1 second. And that is, suppose Obamacare comes in, it works, people like it. I mean, that's probably the big Republican fear. I don't think they'll even pay a price. They'll just go on and oppose the next thing. I'm just going to ask both you guys that.
Their history suggests that that's exactly what they will do. But see, I think looking at the polls, they're going to pay a price in the midterm elections for this, just as they did when Newt Gingrich tried it in 1996.
What do you think, Mike?
This is the quiverings of a cadaver. I may have used that term before, and you can find this in many sources, they're singing, they're at least chanting the down for the death of the GOP for generations here because of the behavior in this Congress. I don't know about that, but I do know that when the Republican budget came out in March, the fix to Medicare looked exactly like, and it was headlines for about a minute and a half. It looked exactly like Obamacare. The Republican fix for Medicare looked exactly like Obamacare. So they know it's going to save money. They know it's going to save. It's already saved hundreds of millions. Mm-hmm. When Ted Cruz was standing telling his lies at the Senate, administration officials were at the UN and all over New York City explaining how many millions it has already saved, how it's reducing health care costs. And that's, you talked about your $539.
Projection is if they postpone Obamacare for a year. I don't know, Bill, maybe you may have the statistics, but it's a fairly big increase in the deficit if they do that. And I just wanted to go back 1 minute, and then guys, 50 years ago, 19 59, let's say, 30% of the seniors lived in poverty, and only 25% had health insurance. Now, 9% live in poverty. Everybody has health insurance. There's a huge... The programs that have been put in, the safety net has been put, has done tremendous good for the American people, for individuals, for families.
And the wealthy don't need it.
They don't need it.
That's the issue.
They
don't want to pay for it because they don't need it. You know, somebody pointed out that if Walmart would take its minimum wage employees and pay them a wage which takes into account the inflation for the past 30 years and paid them, say, $17 an hour, it would reduce our Medicaid, the government's Medicaid payments by an enormous amount. The thing is, for all this talk about bad government, government is actually subsidizing Walmart's cheap wage bill. And this sort of thing, you know, this is welfare for Walmart, not welfare for Walmart employees.
Yeah, you know, I have friends, I love guys that get 5 government checks in his house. You understand? This guy lives on 2 pension checks. His wife gets a pension, gets Social Security, she gets Social Security, and he's got a consulting thing. All his consulting is done with the government. He's got 5 government checks coming every month to his house and complains about the size of government. And, you know, and he's on the golf course. He's complaining from the golf course, by the way.
The average Social Security check is $1,268 a month. They calculate that $350 of that $1,200-something bucks goes to pay for medical bills.
Yeah. Well, let's talk in the few minutes that we have remaining. Let's talk about the October 17th deadline. This is the serious
stuff,
folks.
Right.
The government shutdown is kind of like a little dance that the Republicans are doing with the Democrats. And nobody thinks that, you know, we're going to go without a budget long enough for this to cause serious problems, any more serious problems than the sequestration is already caused. Although, I have to add that it will put an awful lot of people, furlough an awful lot of government employees who won't be getting paychecks, and that's going to be serious for them. But come October 17th, if the Republicans pursue this extortion plan of theirs and actually refuse to raise the debt ceiling, and the United States defaults on its treasury bills, only for one day, this is going to have a catastrophic effect on the American economy. And there are like 5 things that are going to happen. The first thing that's going to happen is that your interest rate on treasury bonds is and T-bills is going to increase, probably by at least 50 basis points. And that's in the short term. Long term, it may be even much more as people lose their confidence in the safety of American
people need
debt.
To understand that T-bills or treasury bills of the United States are basically the bedrock of international economy.
They don't.
They're the measure by which other economic issues, bonds and stocks are.
They're the key interest rate, and their interest rates on American treasury bills is very low because they're considered to be the safest investment in the world. That's why the Chinese hold several $1 trillion worth of them. What happens if they're not now considered to be safe, and they won't be considered safe if the United States defaults? Because first thing that will happen is the rating agencies will reduce our debt rating,
as they did before.
And so what will happen is to get people to buy treasury bills, which the government needs, of course, to pay its bills, you're going to have to pay them a higher interest rate. And who knows if this crisis lasts for long, how high that interest rate will go. And, of course, then what happens is, because the interest rate on bonds is higher, people who are invested in the stock market will shift their investments from the stock market to bonds, and the stock market will fall. some estimates think it will fall as much as 10% immediately following the default. And who knows over the long run. See, the thing about the failure to raise the debt ceiling that's different about a government shutdown is that the effects will continue for years, perhaps for decades, because once you default, nobody will trust you again. And to rebuild that trust in the safety of American bonds will take
years. Let me just make the
point
that default is extraordinarily serious. And what Bill is saying is default is an extraordinarily radical, extreme way to try to get what you want, because the damage they can do the American economy is just absolutely extraordinary. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, it also will essentially dynamite the value of the dollar. And people who hold huge amounts of foreign exchange reserves in dollars, remember that the dollar is the reserve currency of the entire world. And if people begin to lose confidence in that the dollar will retain its value, they will start looking over time to unload these dollars.
So while people have been screaming about the rising debt and the crisis and all this stuff, worldwide people have been investing in dollars. They've been investing in T-bills because it's the safest security around. And so internationally, nobody believes this stuff. But if we default, what happens? Then they'll believe it, right?
Yeah, then they'll believe it. I mean, the thing is that economists and foreign bankers don't look at the absolute number when it comes to the U.S. debt. They look at the debt-to-GDP ratio.
And which has been going down.
And if your gross domestic product is going up, it can accommodate carrying more debt, because really all you're talking about when you're talking about the debt is you're talking about the interest payments on the debt. And that's exactly what a government default would bring to a halt, is our interest payments on our debt. And when that happens, that's serious.
The system works because the United States has been so reliable over so long, and to artificially damage the American economy to get your way on some of these things is a really extraordinarily radical and extreme
stupid
thing to do to
nice
our
word.
Country.
It's stupid. It's incredibly stupid.
So, you know, gaming about the government shutdown is one thing, but this debt crisis can do the kind of damage it was before. And that's why Mike and I, back in 2 years ago, was it, we were going through this, we thought maybe the president should take strong executive action just to resolve this issue that's basically an artificial one.
Well, you know, the threat is not just to our economy. It's to the world economy, because we are the great moderate. The United States economy is the moderator of the world economy. And what's going to happen? Well, if you look today, if you've been looking at the stock market results around the world, you'll find, for example, that the bottom has dropped out of the Japanese stock market. And the reason is because they're really afraid that first comes the shutdown and then comes the default on the debt ceiling. And by the way, domestically, since our interest rates on consumer and small business loans are keyed to the interest rate on our treasury notes, if we default, the next thing that's going to happen is that your mortgage rates are going to rise. And if you own a small business, you won't be able to get a loan to expand your business or to cover your cash flow issues.
All
this,
right,
folks, is serious. If you're talking about adding $25,000 to the cost of a 30-year loan on a house that costs $175,000.
So maybe I should ask Mike, why are the Republicans willing to do this? What's in it for them? Do you understand it?
No, you're asking the wrong guy. The Republican mind? Come on, now, there isn't one, first of all. I don't understand it. You need somebody else. Invite one of your buddies on here that understands such things.
They don't understand what the consequences will
be. They're ideologically driven.
It's like they don't believe in global warming. They also don't believe in economics. They don't know anything about economics.
There's nothing more important than starving the beast. There's nothing more important than small government. I guess. I don't know. There's plenty of resources out there that try to explain government thinking, or excuse me, Republican thinking about, you know, being the standard bearers of tradition and that sort of thing. I don't get it. I want to talk about government shutdown. Once again, USA Today, great article. If you're in a national park, they will be closed. If you're, I mean, if you want to go to a national park, they're closed. If you're already in one, you got 2 days to get out if the government shuts down tonight.
What if I don't get out in 2 days?
You start working on the pipeline.
Okay.
That's your job. Start working on the pipeline.
What do we got next week, Steve?
Next week, we have a really interesting interview, call-in interview, with Winona Howder. She's written a book called Foodopoly. It's about these giant corporations that are increasingly controlling the entire food industry and able to manipulate the market, able to reduce the kinds and numbers of seeds and plants, able to reduce the genetic variables and jack up prices, and I think we'll find be extraordinarily mean to small farmers. I don't know how else to categorize it. She's written a book. She's on a book tour. I think it'll be a really interesting program.
Yeah, there's a crisis in food for sure. The whole Monsanto thing. Obviously, my sources are a little more liberal than I'm, but I don't see how having one source of food, a few sources of food, can be a good thing. The whole idea of the family farm, talk to a farmer, you know, I got friends back in back east that have dairy farms and what they're going through because of factory farms are just, it's horrible.
It's like the number of banks has gone down and down and down, and the banks have gotten bigger and bigger, and the control that they have over the economy has gotten greater and greater. The same thing is happening in a lot of other industries. So I think this will be an interesting program next week. What do we have the week after? We're going to talk about what's happening down in Old Town Cottonwood, right, Mike?
Yeah, we've got a good show coming up. We got a great lineup of certain some of my favorite people from Old Town. Part of the problem is I'm so involved down there that we could fill this studio and three more with some of the players, but it'll be interesting. And we're talking, I don't know, the Old Town Miracle. We got to come up with some sort of catchphrase. What kind of media are we if we don't have some sort of silly catchphrase?
So we try to do some local shows, and this is another one. And for people living in the Verde Valley, the transformation of Old Town Cottonwood is a story that's not being told. Nobody's talking about it. So even though we're Democratic perspective and we talk about Democratic issues, we're going to address this simply because nobody else is, because it's a great story, right?
It's a great party spot. Sorry, Shimori. It's a good place to go and have some fun. There's a lot of galleries. There's a lot of restaurants. There's lots of things to see and do. And it's a great part of town. I mean, you can, you know, where
and
else
how
can
did
you,
it happen? How did it get
where else can you spend $3 on an ounce of olive oil?
Well, you know, it's not as though we don't like good news. And the good news, folks, is all local at this point.
Yeah, I was on
the national news is not good.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. I was on the Old Town Association in those days, which was a committee of the Chamber of Commerce, which has since then become a committee of the Cottonwood City Council. Mm-hmm. My phrase was I'd watched Old Town Cottonwood break people's hearts for 30 years because people move there, they see how cute and quaint it is, reminds them of Michigan or whatever, and they will invest. And then, of course,
I've seen the same pattern, and finally that seems to break. And we think it's a great story, an interesting story.
Now, wait a minute. You can still drive through Cottonwood, by the way. We can do the show after to get back to bad news and see plenty of closed businesses. I can count, you know, tens of thousands of square feet that are empty in Cottonwood, commercial square feet.
Well, the thing that would kill Cottonwood development practically overnight if we don't raise the debt ceiling limit, because you won't be able to get a loan. You know, it'll be like going back to 2007, 2008, when the banks just froze up solid and nobody could get a loan for anything. And that's the sort of thing, unless you want to pay kind of interest rates where you can't make a profit. And this is particularly true when you're dealing with the demand side, where you have had wages depressed for a long time. You have an artificially, as a result of that, you have artificially depressed consumer demand. And so if you then also raise interest rates on your investment loans, you're going to be caught in a real squeeze. You're not going to be able to make a living in a small business if you can't, get a loan to expand and you have just put 640,000 people out of work. That's not a formula for future success, folks.
So the debt ceiling crisis is really about the Republican desire to cut government. And that's a legitimate thing we can discuss. In other words, we can look at what they claim is the bloated spending in Medicare, Social Security, Obamacare, food stamps, unemployment, and all the rest of the government programs. We can talk about that. We can have a debate about the size of the government. That's one thing. But what they're doing is willing to crash the American economy if they don't get their way on this. Instead of, it needs to be resolved in real elections. And in fact, folks, honestly, it was resolved to a great degree in the last election when President Obama was reelected. I mean, that was an affirmation of Obamacare. That was an affirmation of the way he's basically running the economy. And it was a denial of Republicans. And they really believed they had a great chance.
Well, the thing here, too, is the thing you have to think about is what is the fundamental philosophy of the Republican and the Democratic Party? And that comes down to what is government for?
Right. And that's the debate we can have.
If you ask the Republicans, the only thing they want the government to do is to provide us with an army and a police force. Everything else, they figure, should be handled by private industry. Well, you know, the record of private industry in things like building roads or doing basic scientific research or providing affordable health care, the record is not very good, folks.
And the reason you have Obamacare or affordable health care, right, Bill, is because the private sector couldn't deliver insurance to millions and millions of Americans, and we ended up paying for that indirectly. And in a very expensive and inefficient way. I mean, private industry had decades to solve this issue, and they just didn't do it.
Well, somebody, you know, I think you pointed out on one of your shows last year is that the administrative costs for Medicare, right, which is a single-payer plan for those over 65 administered by the United States government, the administrative costs add up to something like somewhere between 1 and 4%, depending on how you calculate it, of the total amount of revenue that they take in. Comparable figures for private insurance companies of all kinds run in the 19 to 20% area. So that's considerably greater efficiency for a government program than any private industry source has ever been able to manage. And I think, you know, we have to reconsider what government can do and what it can do. One of the things it can do is protect the people who for one reason or another are shut out of the economic gains that the rest of the country enjoys. I mean, we can't just abandon 20% of the people. You know, we can't just define 47% of the American people as moochers and abandon them.
And that's really what's happening. I do think that Romney's slip, that recording really reflects their thinking. I think that's what they think. They think they do it all and everybody else is a moocher. And they've created this debt crisis in general. It doesn't add up, folks, if you look for any statistics on what's happening. None of these predictions of disaster have happened. The debt is going down. It's not going down fast enough. The deficits are going down, not going down fast enough. But none of these disastrous predictions from fairly modest spending.
Well, don't forget, from my angle, the debt's not going down fast enough because of the sequestration for this kind of thing. You spend your way out of this kind of thing. That's why the headline in Mother Jones, it's the sequestration, stupid. It's the austerity, stupid. It's the austere budgets that are keeping the economy from growing the way it should.
In other words, the economy seemed to be going really good, and then we had sequestration, which cut a tremendous amount of spending all across the board.
Can I get
at
back?
A time where we, you know, when we needed to increase spending?
Okay, everybody's got the crap scared out of them by now. We can. I want to get back to Obamacare. And just because that was one of our goals this morning was to try to answer some questions about Obamacare. But please go to David Kestenbaum's article, great article on, I believe you can find it on the NPR website. And it answers, we're finally getting some really clear answers. It's complicated. It's complicated if you're a student. It's complicated if you're a working husband and wife. It's complicated the good news is that almost all the complicated answers lean toward really good things for folks.
Obamacare is better than you think.
It's better than you think. Absolutely.
Don't judge it before it actually gets implemented. Listen, if you have a son or daughter, they can stay on your medical insurance until they're 26 years old.
Yeah, but
that was put in several years ago. What's going to happen now, Mike?
Well, I kind of want to move on from the. If you're a student, you can't afford insurance, then you have recourse through Obamacare. That's great. If you have insurance, then if your university or your college is giving you insurance, it's just like you're at work. It's a done deal. You're covered as far as Obamacare.
And we should make that. If you want to talk about Obamacare, we should make the point that for most people, it does are insured through their employer or they're insured through Medicare or Medicaid. It won't affect millions and millions.
The headline
of people.
I saw: what do 240 million Americans have to do about the Affordable Care Act? And the answer is nothing.
Right.
And so there's what? There's 370 million of us. 240 million don't do a thing. The other big thing that they talk about down at the coffee shop is the penalty if you don't get it. The short answer is somebody wrote a question. Well, you know, if I drive without a license, nobody knows it until I get caught. So if I don't buy health insurance, how do I get caught? And quite frankly, the answer is you don't. Except there is a question on the 2014 IRS form, and that asks you if you have it. And that's the only way. That they can find out that you don't have insurance. And now, they can't garnish your wages. All they can do is withhold some of your refund to pay. So this looming penalty and this the thing certainly that my angry libertarians down at the coffee shop talk about is just flat, plain, not true.
Yeah, and frankly, I don't have a lot of Well, I have some sympathy, and I understand how people feel about it. But you gotta have car insurance. Everybody who drives a car needs to have car insurance. You don't often, unless you have an accident, you don't need it. And people need to have health insurance. And it has to be pretty much everybody to get the price down where we can afford it. Reason Social Security works is you start paying in when you're a young guy and you would never put any of your money into savings at all. And you pay your whole time you're working, and then you collect as you get older.
Well, you know, you complain about paying for health insurance when you're not sick. But that sure beats having a situation where when you are sick, you can't go to the doctor.
So next week, Mike, we'll be talking about, and we'll have a caller, we'll be talking about, I guess, big business and food. And later in the month, we'll be talking about poverty in America. There's a new book about poverty in America. And we'll look at the actual statistics and what's happened, how there's some hidden poverty and stuff.
Not so hidden. Drive through Cottonwood, but these are the things that explode liberals' heads. You know, those 400 people controlling $200 trillion, and knowing that you could eradicate poverty in the United States with $134 billion.
All our programs are on our website, available as podcast, and very easy to do. You just go on the website. You basically press a button there that has a little arrow to the right, and you can listen to any of the older podcasts that we have. And we've been broadcasting now for 2 years. There's some great interviews. It's not all us.
There's some you can skip, too.
Yeah, there's some you can skip. And, you know, good shows.
Well, most of it. because we haven't solved any of these problems, most of it, that stuff is still timely and relevant.
That's right.
Yes, that's true, too. Right. You've been listening to Democratic Perspective. Go on to our website, vvid.org.
That's right.
And you can get all of our podcasts, all of our shows, and additional information and references to
and
what we have said.
Our lovely sponsoring organization, Democrats of the Red Rocks, has their own website, which has all kinds of good stuff about their breakfasts and their stuff at the library.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.